Hi, everyone. I am Barry Ira Geller, and this is Mike Royer. Just around now, I met Jack Kirby for the first time. I called him up. I had just bought the rights to Lord of Life, auctioned them a few months earlier, and I was going around talking to different artists, and I said, do something like Jack Kirby. And I never liked what anyone did, so I called up Jack Kirby. I didn't know I was not supposed to do things like that. Roz invited me over, and like she did many people. And we sat down, and we found out that we really liked each other. And he liked my ideas. I mean, I had this grandiose plan of building a science fiction theme park, using the sets for Lord of Life to become pavilions and aspects of that theme park. So everything that Jack and I did was geared towards an amazing amalgamation of a film production, but also had to stand up as an architectural vision. Is this okay? Am I too close to the microphone? Or? Okay. Because I'm hearing reverberations. Is that better? So those drawings, which I'm going to show you in a minute, stood for the vision that Jack had for the first time, maybe, where he wasn't fettered by deadlines, he wasn't fettered by other people telling him, no, do it this way, Jack. I mean, the greatest artist in, I think, the whole century. Bar none, as we can now see from all the films that are out. We entered a place where it was just whatever we wanted to do, but we were making the world. We were changing the world. And that's how he saw things, what the Lord of Life project really was. And so, and Mike, I didn't even really meet until like a few months ago, strange as it may sound, because I never saw him at that period. I just write checks. Which, you know, it's really great.
Well, don't let me interrupt, but what I admire about Barry is that...
A little closer.
Can you hear me? What I admire about Barry is this is a man who had a vision and a dream, and he's never let go of it. And I think that's terrific. And he met with Jack, and a lot of people say, well, what did Jack tell you about this project? Well, he said, this is not for comic books. This is special. And send your invoices to Barry Geller. So that's all I knew until I saw the artwork. And he pointed out something a couple months ago, that the two of us are the only people who saw those incredible pencils before I inked them.
Well, no, I never saw the
pencils. Oh, you never saw the pencils.
You.
So it's just me.
Here. I prepared something like a vignette. In all the times that I visited Jack, he took our creative meetings in his chair, which was always next to his table. There were other times where he reminisced about life on this planet or life on other planets. One time I remember his being miffed at NASA for sending out the Voyager spaceship, which had Earth's location, history, and language. Now they know where to find us. I mean, he was very serious about that. and he complained, but with good humor, although he was deadly serious. For these few meetings, he would move his chair away from the table, especially if I had brought reading materials, books on India or the like, and we'd gather around the nearby end table, trying on opinions and perceptions back and forth. Whenever I came back to their house to see the completed drawing, Roz would lead me into Jack's studio, and there he would be, sitting in his chair, looking up at me with a kind of cat who ate the canary smile in his eyes and on his face, a Cheshire smile. On the drawing table would be the latest Lord of Light creation, completely drawn and inked, usually looking exactly as we discussed, plus an additional universe thrown in. A religious sound of silence usually greeted the unveiling of these drawings, either from bankers, artists, actors, FX people, or architects like Paolo Soleri. The presence of Jack Kirby on his chair, in his table, always watched on, and he is here today.
Well, I want to point out that by the late 70s, Jack started out as a realist. People talk about his anatomy in later years, but Jack knew how to draw it all right when he started. And then he became more of an impressionist. I think by the 80s he was almost an expressionist. But when I saw these drawings, this wasn't Jack the comic book impressionist anymore. This was incredible illustrations. And I knew, without him telling me, that this was something special.
And it really was. I think I may have been one of the last people to actually work creatively with Jack. This was before he even met his attorney, Mr. Paul Levine. But I actually have 2 internet technology patents, and I had written this script. Jack never read the book, but we would always go through the screenplay and flesh out these particular characters. Oh, there he is. No. So that's a patent that my friend Jim found. I think he found my patent.
He never reads a patent.
Right now, we're in a strange place in time. It's been my pleasure and my sense of just amazement that 40 years later, I was 30 then, 40 years later, I'm here in front of you, and the world has changed exactly as we were talking about it. I wrote a letter to Ray Bradbury once at that time, and I said, imagination married to reality creates the future. And, you know, it sounds great, but these, I would take Jack's drawings, and I'm going to get to them in the next, Jack Kirby, there he is, my lawyer. There he is, on the far right.
Comic-Con 1975.
Coming up to Argo. But what I would do is that I'd take the drawings and I'd take them to the men who seated here today. There's recently been an announcement of a most wonderful thing that the producer who started out doing all the Terminator series, which was so great, and Abyss, The Incredible Hulk, and for the last 7 years, you've known her work as the producer of The Walking Dead, Gail Ann Hurd, and they finally announced that they're gonna do it, and which means for all of us that you're looking at how it got there. Of course, Gail actually said to me that she wanted this book since college, that it had concepts in there that, like gender, that there wasn't even any word for it yet. And so it was a very intricate number of events that I persisted through. And I'm just so happy that I told her that the mantle of Ray Bradbury, Jack Kirby, Paolo Soleri, Don Broadbent, Bucky Fuller, and John Chambers. And I always say that whenever I go, John effing Chambers, because that's a different thing, but the greatness of those people are now on the shoulders of the producer of the series, and of course, Gail Ann Hurd. It's a heavy mantle, but we all bear it. We all come from the place where Jack's work and your work and my work just mushroomed. So I wanted to point out, I wanted to invoke these people and give them a chair. So they're here today, because wherever I took the drawings, the bank, again, as I said, I took them to real estate people for the theme park. I took them to architects. That's how I met Paolo Soleri. Flew out. There he is with his, you may have heard of him, or he was considered back then the most prestigious architect in the world. And what his answer to civilization was, they called it arcology. And that's building cities under mountains. And each to take care of everything. He'd never built one. But everybody, each one of these people, was centered around Jack's work. And we would all just get excited, because I would go to Century City in Los Angeles, and I look at all these buildings, and I say, ah, there's the pavilion of this, and there's the pavilion of that, and there's Colley, and there's this. Again, just visualizing all these buildings, and that's what Jack was doing. And that's what I was doing. And everyone was just so excited, excuse me, that we felt the power behind what Jack had created. And we were all there. That was really going to change the world. And I think it has. It just took a little bit longer than I expected. But it's 40 years, and I had that great two-year period of just being able to do anything with Jack, and it brought the visions, all our visions, into what we wanted to do. Aha. Then came the CIA. And I'm going to show people a few things today. But before I do that, I wanted to say that many people think Jack is so great, such a great artist and this and that. Fact is, he really lived there. He couldn't even drive a car. Roz had to drive for him, because he'd be seeing all these comics and stories, and he told me he would crash into some rose bush or something like this.
I used to tell my wife, I said, you know, Roz drives Jack everywhere, hinting that maybe she should be doing the driving, and she looked at me and she said, you're no Jack Kirby.
Well, this takes us to this interesting little vignette, which I'm in a production meeting. John Chambers is on this side, and we were looking at a few other people involved in the production, and we were looking at, I was thinking, well, can we get Brando to be Brahma or something like that? And, you know, but at that time, it was the usual, he was old and fat, and but still, Brando. And John said, oh, I have some makeup thing I've been inventing, and I've used it for guys at the CIA. And we all turned around, and he's standing there right there, like pretty innocent, and we go, what? Yeah, right, John. But so that was the first and only time that I actually knew that there was something really going on. But we didn't take him very seriously. But it was actually, and him, I mean, a lot of people have seen the film Argo. 80% of it is not true. They're just saying, you know, and I can take it scene by scene. And in fact, there's a, we have, I'm going to show you in a few minutes, a reenactment that was put out by Mr. Mendez. And don't anyone think for a single moment that I didn't feel that these guys were so patriotic to put their life on the line. I mean, that's unquestionable. And so, but reality is, there was not truth anywhere. Very little truth because, well, when does the CIA... I mean, CIA doesn't lie. CIA doesn't steal. So, of course, whatever they say, that's exact truth. So, around 2000, someone told me that, have you seen that video of this interview from, I think it was Bravo, I think, about this guy, Mendez? And I'm going, what are you talking about? And so, let's see. John, can I get your assistance? John Dow, Jim Dowdy, I mean.
Okay.
I want to explain
what we're going to do.
We changed the title of the movie on my to Argo. Everywhere. We changed the title of the movie on life to Argo. Everywhere it said one light, now it says Argo.
We stole the script from the Lord of Life. We stole the script from the Lord of Life.
This is the reenactment.
I stopped for a moment and I thought, Hollywood. They knew how to cheat. They knew how to lie.
Can everyone see it?
I dialed the number in Burbank. It's a friend from Washington. As I said, how many people in the location scouting party could scout for a movie?
68.
Huh. That's it. It's a crazy plan, but it just might work. I knew I needed to go and sit down with the guys that I knew and trusted in Hollywood. These guys had to make it happen. John Chambers was a Hollywood makeup artist who created Planet of the Apes, among other things. I told him I had to turn 6 diplomats into a Hollywood film crew and bring them out to the airport to work. And we need you to help us figure out a way to get them out of there. John loves the challenge. He had a twinkle in his eye.
It's a crazy idea. We can do it.
John said, we need a real movie. Something that seemed to belong in Tehran. Going through a pile of scripts. Well, none of them seem to be the right thing. But I'm not an expert on scripts.
It's not working.
I was a spy, but I was trying to act like a film producer.
Give me something believable. You know, something you would make.
And that's when John said, oh yeah, I was working on a movie, and it was really a big deal.
Lord of Light.
I read the script. It had pizzazz. It had look. It and smell. So I said, perfect. I took the script and struck a line through Lord of Life, the title.
What are we going to call our movie?
There was a punchline to a knock-off joke that we told. Argo yourself.
It's true. That part. Like I said earlier, of course we believe everything that the CIA says. And Mr. Mendez put this on, this reenactment on, because he wasn't happy with the director of the film, Argo, and who had basically collapsed 2 months into maybe a few minutes, and none of that happened. And in fact, when I was doing Science Fiction Land, I had an associate producer, a supervising producer, who was taking in money from some people illegally. And he got caught, and we all went to jail. And so, at that moment, John, who was my makeup master, he's the one that took the script to Mr. Mendez. See, actually, they were at the very end of the film, Argo, where all these things are on, they're off, they're on, they're off. What really was going on was the fact that they tried to do it a month earlier, and they got turned down by the State Department. And then when Sean realized that maybe Barry and company may be a while now that I was being arrested for securities fraud, because my name was on everything. He called up Mr. Mendez and said, look, I got it. And he's the one that promoted the entire possibility as a set. And it worked. And so John would do things like, guys would be in a car, and there could be a black dude and a white dude, and from a little further back, it looks like they're both white. I mean, he was the real Mission Impossible guy. He started that whole thing. Anyway, so that's how it got to the CIA, through John Chambers. And so what we just said, wherever there was Lord of Light, he put Argo. And this we got from the Freedom of Information Act and things like it. Let's see.
That's a little more full story.
Okay. Can you? Thank you for your patience. Wow, look at all these people.
I frequent a little Western-themed restaurant saloon in Jacksonville, Oregon. And a few years ago, I walked in, and I usually kibitz with the gal that owns the place, and she said, have you seen the movie Argo? And I said, not yet, but I do have a connection. And I told her about it, and she said, well, Argo, frack yourself.
Mouse disappeared.
Want to put in this? Bear with us for a little slight technical view.
Well, this has been in the works for 40 years, so a few more minutes while we deal with the technical problems shouldn't bother you.
Concerning other Americans in Iran, who probably will also be hostages today, except for...
When the embassy was overrun, we were immediately on a wartime footing. Along comes a memorandum from the State Department saying, by the way, six of our people escaped, and they're in the care of Canadians. Could you please think about how you might get them off, too? So now, we've got a problem. How are we going to get them off ahead of possible pursuit?
The Iranians don't know they're there.
But they will, rather soon. My biggest problem, creating a deception that everybody can believe in. A Hollywood location scouting party. We stole the script from The Lord of Light. It was a defunct production. Mythology, sci-fi, and mystical thing. If you read the script, it is very hard to follow. It is very convoluted. My guys went in, set up the production offices on the old Columbia Studio lot in Hollywood. This is a Friday. By Tuesday, 4 days later, we were up and running.
You're posing as a Hollywood producer making a fictitious script, Lord of Light.
Yes. The telephone that somebody's going to answer, oh yeah, they're out there scouting the location. And then we made this portfolio that had everything in it that I would carry along with me. That's the window dressing. Say, okay, that's you, and then you're the location manager, your transportation coordinator, set designer. And they all just loved it. You know, everybody wants to be from Hollywood. We arrived on the 25th of January. We went in and marched them out 3 days later. Mental skills. How to make something out of nothing. My 25-year career at CIA was that. Somebody that can make a radio out of a clamshell. That's the kind of individual that it takes. The kind of person who can appear humble, the kind of person who doesn't need to be recognized.
Kind of a hero that never needs to be identified as a hero.
It's just a particular type of person. Some of them, I guess, are heroes.
What happens at the end of Lord of Light?
I have no idea. I don't have time to read it.
Brought to you by. I love seeing that thing. I don't know how many hundreds of times I've seen it. But whatever happened, whatever was our karma, whatever we were doing in this country, on January 25th, you see, the Shah waited until Carter was out of office before letting the people go. If you guys, someone my age or something like that remembers that. And it was really calculated like that. And no matter what has happened, where it's been, this is where it is today. This is the CIA Spy Museum in Virginia, Washington, D.C. And there's the Argo. There's my script, really, an adaptation in there. And I know it's there because of the color. Can you see it? It's the color stuff coming out of the bottom. Because I used to have all these color Xeroxes, guys. And the most interesting thing is they selected the Terminal of the Gods, of which I'm going to show you again in a moment. But a few years ago, I was interviewed by the Sons of the Revolution, of the Iranian Revolution. And many of them are artists now, and some guy, they put out a big book about Hollywood and Persia to show what that was about, how Hollywood is treated Persia. And I asked him, well, how did the receipt, and this is, I have it in writing and all that, how did receiving those drawings really make a difference? Did the drawings really make a difference? And this, and his answer is more significant. I don't care how many films are made from Jack's characters. His answers really showed me that it's a whole nother level of which Jack Kirby lived in. And his answer was, oh yeah, we thought the drawings made us really believe that the CIA had was a real production company. I mean, it wasn't the stick figures that you've seen in the film at the very end. That never happened. But then I said to him, well, what was his most favorite one? And he said, that's over there. The Terminal of the Gods. And I said, well, why? And he said, well, it represented to us the leaving of the Shah and the return of our national religion. Meaning that Jack Kirby's work, our collective work, this was the first one that he did, but if you really look at it, all the films that are out, it's changing all our children's minds and our minds. We've grown up with it. Can you go on? That's John Chambers. But when you think about it, it represented the change in the whole country's culture. That's why they made it was so easy to just walk them in, walk them out, just like he said. That part was true. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that little anecdote in there because Jack's work and my work with him altered the culture in many more ways than we ever realized. Yes, his comics are making billions, but his real personal work, which was the Lord of Light work, that altered the culture. And so, I got a lot of press at that time, and my favorite one was Science Fiction Land, the grandest plan or the greatest scam in science fiction history. And here again, let's see, this was I'm going to go through now some of the, there's 14 drawings, and we have plenty of time. Every one of these drawings was almost the same, that I'd spend a day there with him, going through various different concepts. I mean, there was no order to anything. We could have been talking about baking. You know, it's like, well, what did you say, or anything like that. But what we talked about was consciousness. What are the gods thinking about? What are they doing? How do they operate? And so this was one. This came from, it's called the Pavilions of Joy. There's one line in the book, if I remember correctly. And at one point, Kali wanted to save Mahasamatman, or Sam. And she went to Brahma and said, look, I'd like to, let's not kill him again. And he said, sure. Why don't you come to my Pavilion of Joy, my dear lovely goddess, and we'll discuss it. And that's the idea that I took to Jack. And each one of those buildings, this is Restaurant Row in Science Fiction Land. And each one of those buildings, I figured I'd get different countries to pop off a few million each. And we were going to finance the film from just the parking lot. I mean, and stuff like this. Because this is why we were doing it, to just finance the film. We needed $50 million. That was a lot of money then.
Well, let me interrupt, Barry, if I can. If you look at this magnificent art, and like I say, I didn't know what it was except just looking at it. It was much larger than comic book pages, and I knew that this was something that Jack put a lot of his soul into. I still think these are probably, next to his gods, the greatest pieces of Jack's work that I ever inked, and I think it's probably some of the best inking I ever did on Jack, because it was something special.
Well, on the right, there's Jack's Shiva, and it was his idea of Kali. And again, I don't know if you can see it, the tiny people at the very bottom. I mean, we're at there about 150 feet up in the air on nothing. We're a bird flying. We're a thought form. We're the wind flowing. That's where Jack's viewpoint was. Uh-huh. This is, I guess it's called a Kirby Crackle. This was, the color version was done by Heavy Metal, whom I licensed the drawings to, Blacklight. But essentially, Sam's Power, and that's Jack here, colored by Heavy Metal Mark Englert, and built, it was, his power was magnetic levitation. And I'm still going to do it. I'm going to come out with magnetically levitating models in not too distant future. Now you can see a bigger picture of the Terminal of the Gods. This is him, this is Jack, in his Mayan stage. He had just finished the Eternals. Before I go on, it was the artist Robert Meyer that actually built the whole thing for Comic Fest. And I worked some magic to own it. So here, this is really, at the top, you can see the sort of idea of a dome, because Buckminster Fuller was going to build and design the dome over science fiction land, half a mile high, 3/4 mile in diameter. And basically, his whole theory was he wanted to do it over Manhattan for the Manhattan State, New York State World Fair or something in the 60s. Have a few degrees hotter in the inside, and the dome floats. Or so he said. But this is the first thing he did. This is called the Northeast Corner of Heaven. And essentially, on the right, you have planetariums, and you have all this stuff going on, people walking back and forth, and there's a tube over there on the very left called a jet tube transporter. And that thing blowing up, or coming up, is based on a real Tibetan stupa diagram, and out of the book. This I call Brahma's supremacy, and we were going to do a whole holographic exploitation or projection. And it really represents why we're here today. I ended up giving this back to Jack allowing me to basically to sell this stuff at Sotheby's in the 90s. But this was Jack's idea of God. I mean, sure, he drew men, but remember, he was Jewish, a Hebrew, and we don't have visions of men in the sky. So it's Jack's attempt of expressing what was in his mind and in his heart. That became this. That, you can see the, I can't point to it, but you can see the heads became that. And an engineer's nightmare. Cantilevered gardens. How are you going to hold it up? And the garden revolved one way, and the heads revolved another way. And again, you can see the people coming in. And Jack did this in 1978.
Barry, in looking at all these marvelous drawings again, from this perspective, I was thinking, wouldn't this make one heck of a terrific new convention center for Comic-Con?
That's wonderful. I'm sure that a few people here with some connectivity juice can help us. I love that. I mean, why not? I mean, Disney does it. Well, they also bought Marvel. So, this, which is called the Royal Chambers of Brahma, I had this vision. And some of these is like 70% Jack, and some of them are like 70% Barry. And I had this vision that, well, how do you take a meeting with Brahma? And so each one of them, you see those walls, those slats over there? That's where they come out like a gangplank and right up in the air. It's 200 feet high. And Brahma is there, and they have a meeting with Brahma. And then it retreats back into the world. Into the world. And when I was designing, we're telling Jack, hey, we want snakes here, and it's called a Radha throne, a Naga throne. Raj says, hey, well, whatever. He's into snakes. And they thought that was funny, because I was really describing it. And so again, it's that point of view that to see that there's going to be more heavy metal stuff coming out based on this from other points of view.
Barry, we're kind of running low. You have to get to the other stuff, or you're going to turn it over.
Oh, God. I'm just going to go through this because we're, as always, never have enough time. I said I wanted a Taj Mahal, and he gave me this. And this is basically for the science fiction land where people are living or come to visit and they have the hotel. Jack said he threw everything in but the kitchen sink. And this was towards, I think this was one of the last things that he did. So the last thing, he did it. Can you see it? Perfect. You did well, man.
Yeah. All night, 4 o'clock.
And so here I am with a pencil. I drew out the whole thing, and I handed it to him, and this is how that came. What Jack did, he turned it upside down and a horizontal lateral turnover. So I have the rooms on the bottom, and he put the rooms at the top in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, Aurora, Colorado. Oh, sorry. We need Arlen Schumer here. Now, in the present, I have met some years back an incredible artist. I'm just going to jump around a little bit here, named Jacob Atienza, and he sent me that drawing, the one on the left. And recently, he started playing around with some software, 3D software, and I saw the entire characters of the book come to life in a brand new way. And so we did, I don't know if you have this, yes. The other one. Yeah. Sorry about that.
The other one.
So that was done from the one on the left, and the one on the right was 3D printed. And so I'm starting to do a bunch of these right now, and they're gonna do, I guess, a Kickstarter or something.
Yeah.
And that'll create the manufacturing. But I'm doing it in 1/3 the time it normally takes other models. And it's all based on the characters of the book. I'm going to move on because we're running out of time. There's Kali on the right. That was done in like 2010 or 11. And I always looked at that and I said, I don't want to run into that woman in an alley. I mean... And this is the 3D model. I mean, voluptuous, powerful, and you'll have three heads.
Not painted, though.
No, it's going to be painted. This is just the software.
The raw one.
Yes, this is the software. That's okay. I think I'm wrapping up, actually. I have a few minutes. And so that brings us to the energy, the life, the vision of each one of these men. Don Broadbent was the premier holographer at that time. We know Ray Bradbury, we know Buckminster Fuller, and John Chambers, and everyone was alive. We loved what we were doing. We loved the imagination of that we thought what was going to happen of people, children, coming to the theme park. And I was sort of seeing myself at that time as like Howard Hughes, strangely enough, who hired all these scientists and just said, work, and just gave them money, go ahead, work. And that's how I felt with the illustrious men that I assembled together. And here we are now with the announcement of Gail Ann Hurd's production, Valhalla Productions, of a new TV series that I'm hoping could last several years.
Based on the book.
Based totally on
the Lord of Light. Yes.
And so we're going to hand out some stuff, these things, outside. And I want to do is whoever signs up for it will get
an email,
but they'll get one of these pictures of the. One of these pictures. So something I can give back to you.
So you're going to give them a print of the picture.
That's
if
right.
You sign up for the email address. And then there'll be information on the Kickstarter and things
right.
coming up in the next year.
Just wrapping it up. Wow, look at this. I'm so impressed. I'm so beyond belief. And I can tell you that Jack and Ray and John and Paulo and Don and Buckminster Fuller, we all thank you for coming and being here today. You want to say?
I sent him a very simple message on Facebook the other day when he first let out the news that Lord of Light was going to be on television, and it was simply, it's about time.
You know, 40 years, I've been like, I was sort of in another industry, I left Hollywood, and I came back about 7 years ago after doing a bunch of things, but I am so glad to be here today with all of you. And this beautiful man is now, he's telling me all these stories of what went on. Anyway, thank you very much. I think